My listening friend, welcome to the Monday edition of Mark and Friends. It's September 9th, 2013. With me in the studio is co-host Pastor Jason Schiffo, and on the line is executive producer Philip Sarnecki, a local boy that's done us good. We recently had a conversation, and a mutual friend, John Acton, got us connected. Well, Philip, before I go any further in our conversation and introduce you more formally with our radio listeners, my sentiments and my support goes out to you, because if you've had to be a friend of John Acton for these many years, it's a burden that the Lord has put on you that I don't know how you bear.
I think there's a crown in heaven that goes with that.
Yeah. In fact, it was through John that I got your email address and learned about this movie that you're helping to bring to our area. In fact, this Friday is the debut at the Savoy 16 Theater. The film is called A Strange Brand of Happy. And thank you for the special link. Both Jason and I got to see the whole film and evaluate it, critique it. And I told Jason that it brought tears to my eyes at the very end. And I liked how all the humor was intertwined in the whole storyline. It's kind of a romantic comedy. And I could picture Jason and I, he's been a co-host with me for the last few years on Wednesday and Friday and many times throughout the week. But some of the humor and the little digs and the fun-loving spirit that these two guys have is like how Jason and I oftentimes will interact. And so I appreciate John introducing me to you. So you're a hometown boy, originally from the St. Joseph, Ogden area, a U of I grad. Your mom and dad are from this area, I think, graduating from Champaign Central, and other family members in this area. But you're at a much different place now. In fact, I think we're calling you in and around the Kansas City area, and you've worn a lot of different caps over the years and have a unique faith story. So kind of introduce yourself to our radio listening family, how God has taken you from this local area, having a feeling of maybe being involved in ministry, and yet it took a special, unique turn from a campus crusade gathering you were at.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. I actually grew up in Homer, Illinois, until my junior year, and we went through the, at the time, and it may still be, the longest school strike in, I think, U.S. history. So that was kind of a unique thing, and we ended up with a lot of people moving to some other local communities. I ended up moving to St. Joe, spent about my last year and a half there, graduated from St. Joe Ogden, and then actually went to Illinois State for a short period of time, went there to play ball, and then ended up transferring to the University of Illinois, where I graduated. So, you know, got involved in the financial industry, even back in college, studied finance and political science. You know, grew up in a church-going family, very, very thankful for that, God-fearing parents, but don't know that I really had a personal relationship with Christ. You know, that was something that through college, it was actually the first football game of my freshman year in college. A gentleman named Dave Engel, who was on staff with Athletes in Action, did the chapel for the game, and it really just was something that connected with me. Dave invited me out to lunch. We went out and had lunch that day, and then he actually followed up. And I ended up doing a Bible study, and many of our viewers may know Matt Hurgis, who pitched in the majors for a number of years. So Matt and myself and one other gentleman, another athlete who's actually a pastor now, we were in a Bible study for a couple of years with Dave, and that's really kind of how my faith journey started. So through the Bible study with Dave, you know, Athletes in Action is really a ministry of Campus Crusade for Christ, or now CREW. So I got involved with Campus Crusade and very involved with Athletes in Action then throughout college, which, you know, really helped me with my spiritual journey and my spiritual growth. I would say for the most part I was one of those quote-unquote good kids. So, you know, there was a part of me that didn't quite understand, you know, why did I need to be saved? I'm a good kid. I don't do anything really, really bad. But actually reading, I remember when I read C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity, and I read the chapter on pride. C.S. Lewis called it the greatest sin, because all other sins really come from that sin. And I thought, uh-oh, I've got a problem here. And So that was really a lot of my background, and, you know, really thankful to, you know, Dave Engel and Athletes in Action and Campus Crusade, who had a really huge impact on my spiritual walk and my spiritual growth in college. Started attending Windsor Road Christian Church. Randy Boltinghouse, who's still the pastor there and a good friend, ended up marrying my wife and I. And that was another place where I really just started growing a lot in college as a believer. And again, Randy and Windsor Road was another place that had a big impact on me.
Now, when did you meet up with Heidi? And Husbandry 101 would say you need to do a little shout-out for her right now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, my blessed wife, we met actually at Eastview Christian Church. We were both living in Bloomington, Illinois. She's from the Hattiesburg, Mississippi area and grew up in Mississippi, went to school down there, but moved up to Bloomington after college. So we actually met at Eastview. She was leading the worship team, singing in the choir. And that's kind of an interesting story, because I saw her singing, wrote in my journal, you know, Lord, I really wouldn't mind meeting that young lady that I saw singing. Hmm. And literally 8 days later, at a little bagel shop around the corner from my office, I walked into the bagel shop, and she was sitting by herself having lunch, which anyone that knows my wife, she's an extreme extrovert. She loves people, and it was very rare for her to be having lunch by herself, but she had forgotten something at home that day, and so she ran out, ran home to get it to come back to work, and she just happened to stop there briefly to get some lunch, and then in I walked and looked at her and said, "Don't I know you?" And, of course, she said, "Yeah, right, pal." But I quickly recovered, you know, as any good salesperson thinking on their feet, and I said, "Well, no, didn't I see you, you know, at church last week?" So, you know, she thought, well, maybe he's halfway decent. So I spoke with her for a few minutes, and I asked her if we could continue the conversation, if she'd give me her number. And she wouldn't give me her home number, but she gave me her work number. So I followed up, and I guess that'll be 15. Well, we'll be married for 15 years in November.
And so you're thinking to yourself, or maybe initially were you thinking this is a divine appointment because you had written about her in the journal. So how much after that point in time did you get married?
It would have been about a year and a half, so we dated about a year. Heidi actually had been engaged prior to that, and she had called off the wedding. And so she wasn't in a big hurry to rush into anything, and she always felt it was important that you date through four seasons, and I thought that was a pretty good idea myself. So we dated for a year and then had about a six-month engagement.
That's well. So if you met in the wintertime, she could see what you look like in shorts, right?
That's right.
You mentioned playing ball. Was that football?
Yeah, football. Playing would be a misnomer. occasionally people will ask me if I played, and I have to correct them and say, well, I practiced.
Oh, well, the Big Ten, it's demanding, and I mean, these are the cream of the crop. I mean, you know, with scholarships and all, that even making the team is an accomplishment.
You know, I enjoyed it, and it's great for your, you know, personal self-discipline and your time management and just a lot of the things you learn about persistency and, you know, relationships that you build. And so even though my college career wasn't much and didn't last long, I'm thankful for the opportunity that I had.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, Philip, how do you make that transition? You've met your wife, you dated through four seasons, and you've come to this point where obviously you're working in finance. But look, everybody wants to be in movies. I don't know a lot of people who want to finance movies. So tell me about what that journey looks like.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And had I known the numbers on, you know, the financial data on people who do invest in movies, and the vast majority of them lose money, I'm not sure I would have done it. Maybe it was a good thing that I didn't know all the boundaries and rules going in. But been in the financial world for 20 years. Over here, we were in Illinois and then Cincinnati, and then the last 5.5 years over here in the Kansas City area. And right about the time I was leaving Cincinnati, I met up with a gentleman named Joe Boyd. Joe had spent about 15 years out in L.A. doing some acting and writing. And he had moved back to Cincinnati where he grew up. He was actually going to take over one of the largest churches in Cincinnati as the pastor. So an abrupt career change for him. But he had a movie that he had written when he was back in L.A., and he had actually a pretty big name that was going to star in the movie, and he had a studio that was going to distribute it. And when the actor had to back out, the studio kind of wanted to take the film over, but it was kind of his baby, and he didn't want them to do that. So it kind of got shelved. And then in 2008, when the economy got real bad, he's now back in Cincinnati, and he realized that if he could raise the money and finance the film, that they could really shoot this movie for, you know, dramatically less than what it would have cost him a few years earlier back in L.A. He had a lot of friends in the movie business that really weren't working at the time and were looking for work. And so when I connected with him, you know, I thought, well, I had a few things that I wanted to do. I asked him to put my mom in the movie. My mom had played the lead in a number of plays at Urbana High School, and even had a partial acting scholarship to Eastern Illinois, but she ended up marrying my dad, having me, and so never went to college. And so I thought it'd be kind of fun to get her in the movie. Of course, you know, Joe later told me, you know, I'd have put your cat in the movie if you, you know, financed it. So I probably should have asked for a little bit more. And then he gave me the executive producer title, which I didn't really know what that meant at the time. Gave me a little bit of extra ownership because I ended up financing the rest of the movie. And it did well. It won Best Picture at Cincinnati and Louisville Film Festivals. Then got to the Las Vegas Film Festival, where it won another award. Didn't win Best Picture, but won another award. And so I thought, well, you know, we've got maybe a talented group of people here. So when this next project came up for A Strange Brand of Happy, you know, Joe enjoyed working with me. I enjoyed working with him. And so he asked me if I'd be interested in being the executive producer for the next movie, A Strange Brand of Happy. I decided to do that, and even more than that, I ended up buying a large chunk of the production company. Joe and two other people that had worked on the first movie left the church, a very large church in Cincinnati where they were working, and went to work full-time for Rebel Pilgrim Production, our production company. So it's going well. We're thrilled to get A Strange Brand of Happy in the theaters. What I've read is about 8,000 or 9,000 movies get made every year, and probably 400 to 450 end up in the theaters. So even in a limited release like we have, you know, we're really excited to have our second movie in the theaters.
So talk a little bit for us, Philip, about the identity of Rebel Pilgrim Productions. What does your faith journey, and even Joe's, we've read a little bit about his, and we'll have him on an interview on another program. How does your guys' Christian identity funnel into the production company? And then what makes you guys unique than, say, some of the other distinctly Christian production companies?
Yeah, our mission statement is that we tell stories that spark hope and action. And you know, our first movie was not a distinctly Christian movie, although it was just kind of a goofball comedy, to be honest with you. It's kind of a poker-themed airplane almost. But it did have some elements of redemption and some elements of family woven throughout the movie. And then A Strange Brand of Happy, the idea there is that we would get people to the movie who maybe otherwise wouldn't go see a quote-unquote Christian movie, or they wouldn't go see a religious movie, quote-unquote. So we are trying to hit a broader audience. Obviously, we know that a lot of the people that attend are going to be believers, and, of course, we want it to be a good message for them as well. We want it to be a clean movie, et cetera, and a movie they feel like, you know, hey, I could take my, you know, for example, we're going to take our 13-year-old daughter, and I'm, you know, very comfortable taking her to see it. But we do want it to be a real movie, too, that connects with people and gets them thinking about God, gets them thinking about some bigger concepts about faith and God and, you know, what all of that means, and that it would maybe spark some hope. It would spark some discussion. And so that's really kind of the idea of the production company as well. And, you know, we want to tell great stories, you know, again, that spark people to hope, to action. So that's really kind of the goal with the production company.
Well, Mark and I had an opportunity to preview the film already, and I would say that your mission statement is very prevalent in there, that as the movie builds, there is a sense of hope and redemption that builds through it. Is any of that, when you got to read the script or even watch the movie after it was done, say, wow, that's kind of part of my story, too?
Well, I think for any Christian, it's redemption is a part of all of our stories. I mean, it's the central story to God creating the universe and, you know, creating mankind. And certainly it's a big part of my life. And then again, you might not have looked at my life, as I mentioned earlier, and seen a lot of overt outward sin, so to speak, but there was plenty of sin going on in my heart. And finally coming to that place where I realized I need a personal relationship with Christ as well. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the idea behind the stories and behind the movies, and that, we do want people to, recognize that, redemption is a part of this, and it's a part of the stories, and it really needs to be a part of all of our lives. In meeting Joe, it was interesting because I can tell you the first time I met with him to negotiate, or, to him to kind of share what he wanted to do with the first movie and to get that story told, I did walk away thinking to myself, now this guy's a pastor, is that right? he's a little bit, he's not your normal, what you would think of as a pastor, even though he speaks all over the country at churches all over the country. And he really has, a unique way to connect with kind of today's generation, if you will. And he understands that, we don't live in a 1950s America anymore. And some people wish, we did. There's a big part of me that wishes we did, but we don't. And Joe, both in his preaching and through the production company, through the stories that we tell in the movies, I think he really gets that. He really understands that, and he's able to connect to what is kind of going on in this, really what's becoming a kind of a post-church America.
Well, Philip, I want to ask this question because I really want to draw this out of your faith journey and your story. But in the Bible, it says, Jesus says, it's hard for a rich man to get into heaven. And I think that there's a lot of times we look at that and we think that somehow money is going to separate us from God. And yet I think in your faith story, and I think that's wrong, I want to point that out. Boaz was wealthy and part of a great redemption story. Esther, continually God uses people with means to be able to do those. But there was a moment in your faith story where you were thinking that maybe you were going to go into ministry, but somebody spoke and said, wait, a rich man can do great things for the kingdom of God.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was a fairly new Christian when I was graduating from the University of Illinois. I thought in my naivete, I guess, as a young Christian, that if I was going to be a, quote, good Christian, unquote, that, I probably needed to go into the ministry. And I was doing an internship with a major financial company. Many people locally may know John Wright. So I just knew that and I was doing very well as an intern, and I knew that, if I did that, there was going to be some really healthy financial gain because they were very directly correlated. And we had a gentleman, Mike Batley, who was on staff with Campus Crusade here at the University of Illinois at the time. He's actually a pastor out east now. I was telling Mike that I said, Mike, I think I'm going to go on staff with Athletes in Action. I love the Lord and I love sports. And so, hey, let's just connect the two. And Mike is a very energetic guy. He used to lead the Christmas conferences for Campus Crusade, and his reaction really, in a way, kind of startled me in his non-reaction, in that he said, "Okay, well, that's great. I'm excited for you." And I kind of stopped and I said, "Well, Mike, I thought you'd be a little more excited than that. Why the reaction?" And he said, "Well," he said, "we have plenty of people that want to go into ministry." He said, "What we don't have is plenty of people who have a heart for ministry and a heart to give and finance and fund those ministries." And, I had never heard the concept that making money was a spiritual gift. And he took me to Romans and walked me through, one of the spiritual gifts, of course, being giving. And he said, "What does the giving presuppose?" And I said, "Well, I suppose it presupposes that you have money." And he said, "Exactly right. And how do you get that money?" I said, "Well, if you don't have really wealthy family members, which I didn't, and you're not going to inherit it, I guess you got to go out and make it somehow." And he said, "Exactly." And just kind of like the light bulb went off, and he said, you're kind of doing really well in this internship and in the business world, and you seem to have a passion for that. And I said, yeah, I do. I said, I enjoy the business world, and, you know, I've had some early success here. So he really just encouraged me to, you know, to keep praying about it. And I'm so thankful for him that he kind of opened my eyes that money is a test. I mean, God speaks a lot about money in the Bible. It's that something that I have studied for years. I have wrestled with for years. You know, God has chosen for whatever reason to bless us in great ways. And, you know, we have to be very, very faithful in that. It's just, you know, how we handle our money is really just comes down to an attitude of the heart. But for whatever reason, he does choose to bless some people financially. But the people who are blessed financially have to understand that they are going to be held to the standard of how they've been blessed.
Yeah, and I would love to keep you on. SRN News won't wait. And there's a verse, and I'm really showing great restraint, but that Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, so you can press kingdom, power, influence, and authority into all your realms of influence. So you don't have to be necessarily that pastor or missionary to do kingdom work. And we're so thankful that you're using your skills, your resources, your time, your energy, your expertise, and you're helping to bring a strange brand of happy to the Savoy 16 Theater, debuting this Friday. Come on, listeners. You'll enjoy it. It's a fun-loving, romantic comedy with a redemptive message, and I think you'll be blessed by it. Savoy Theater this Friday, the 13th, is the debut. So get your tickets, bring a friend or family member, enjoy some popcorn, and enjoy a great movie, and it's entitled A Strange Brand of Happy. Philip, thanks for being available, and we're going to have one of your co-owners, Joe Boyd, on in the coming days.
Well, Joe's also the star, one of the stars of the movie, alongside Rebecca St. James and Shirley Jones. You know, many will remember as Mrs. Partridge, Academy Award winner. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys will have a lot of fun with Joe being on. But I really appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you so much. Great to have the movie. You know, it's in L.A., it's in Houston, it's in Philadelphia, but to have it in my hometown of Champaign is really exciting.
The movie is titled A Strange Brand of Happy, debuting this Friday at the Savoy 16 Theater and running all week. Tomorrow you'll hear an interview with Rebecca St. James, who has a leading role in this movie. But right now, the first and fifth caller will get two tickets to the Savoy 16 Theater for this Sunday. Two tickets to the movie A Strange Brand of Happy. Call right now, 217-367-7777. That's the first and fifth caller. So keep trying while Karen's answering the first caller. And when this program re-airs in the evening, at this point in the program, again, the first and fifth caller will get two tickets to this Sunday's edition of A Strange Brand of Happy at the Savoy 16 Theater. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. And tune in tomorrow. You'll hear from Rebecca St. James on her leading role in this new movie coming to the Savoy 16 Theater this Friday called A Strange Brand of Happy.